Let's look together at Psalm 122. Psalm 122. It has been a while since we did an installment here in our work through the Psalms. This is one of the songs of degrees, and in particular, one of the songs of degrees of David. Now, there are three of the 15 songs of degrees that have David's name attached to them, though he probably wrote most of the others, maybe all of the others. 127 is a song of degrees for Solomon, and some say of Solomon. But let's read this psalm, Psalm 122. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Our feet shall stand within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem is builded as a city that is compact together, whither the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, unto the testimony of Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. For there are set thrones of judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee. Peace be within thy walls, and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and companions' sakes, I will now say, peace be within thee. Because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek thy good. These songs of degrees are most likely songs or psalms that David composed when he was bringing the ark to Jerusalem. That was a momentous occasion, called for great rejoicing and great worship. These songs were furthermore likely sung thereafter every year, three times a year, when all of the people of the tribes of Israel made their way to Jerusalem. And as we've seen in the previous two psalms thus far, the content of these psalms certainly lends to that use, to traveling pilgrims arriving from outlying regions in the kingdom of Israel, outlying tribes, cities, villages, coming for the feast of Passover and Pentecost, or first fruits, and then tabernacles. And I can't help but wonder if the people who lived in Jerusalem missed out on a little something, because they didn't have to do the travel. They were not the pilgrims. It was those who lived outside of Jerusalem that had the enjoyment of leaving their homes, making the journey up to Jerusalem, the city that was in a high mountain, and where the Temple Mountain was located. So as you read these songs of degrees, and the word degree means ascent, something like climbing or a staircase, we might say, taking steps upward, that seems to fit the picture of pilgrims coming up. Any direction of approach toward Jerusalem was coming up. So as you read these songs of degrees, imagine yourself as a pilgrim traveling from probably the farthest region was Dan, the tribe of Dan, far in the north. And it's a long journey, takes several days to get there on foot. And though it's tiring and difficult and demanding, you and the companions you travel with are anticipating the feast days.
And there's great eagerness to get to Jerusalem and to join in the happy occasion and to encourage one another as you go along on your journey. You sing these songs. That seems to be the use and the purpose in the history of the nation of Israel. All of your thoughts are focused upon Jerusalem, upon the feast, upon all the others that you will see there, upon the special days that the Lord had appointed them to come together for. Jerusalem was the destination. You didn't just pass through Jerusalem, headed on to other regions. Jerusalem was the end of the journey. Jerusalem was the destination. You know, we use that term today. You know, we say that Tulsa, Oklahoma is not really a destination. It's a place you kind of pass through on your way to somewhere else. Jerusalem was the destination. It was the end of the journey. And especially the Temple Mount and the sacrifices, the priests and their work, this was all especially the focal point of the destination. And so now let's just briefly look at these verses once again with all this in mind. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. You're in some faraway part of the kingdom of Israel, and it's time to put on your walking shoes or sandals, whatever, and make your way to Jerusalem, pack your food, and get ready to go. And you don't have this attitude of, oh, no, not again. No, I was glad. Literally rejoicing. This is a matter of delight. When they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. It was not a drudgery. It was something eagerly anticipated. And notice the words that were said to the psalmist. Or perhaps David is sort of imagining, because he obviously, you know, lived in Jerusalem. But he's imagining what it would be like for someone in those pilgrimage circumstances. The message was not, go into the house of the Lord. No, it's let us go. It's not just that some are going and the rest of us will stay home and do better things. It's let us go. Everyone is going. The Lord commanded them all to go. And so there is this sense of company and companionship and fellowship together in serving the Lord and going up to the feast. Our feet shall stand within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Our translation makes it a future anticipation. Shall stand. There is expectation and longing. Can't wait to get there. And the anticipation of delight once you arrive, you know, in a way, that's half of the fun, we might say. If we're planning a trip someplace, and I don't mean to trivialize the feasts of the Lord, but if we're just planning a vacation trip or something, they say half the fun is the planning of it, looking forward to it. Well, when you're talking about obeying the Lord's command to come together on a feast occasion, then that just makes it all the more significant, all the more important, and all the more to be anticipated with great joy and eagerness. Our feet shall stand within thy gates. These poor, tired feet, oh, this rough road, oh, I think I've got a blister under that toe, you know. Listen, these little feet, these tired, dusty feet are going to stand within the gates of the city. And that eases the pain, doesn't it? Are we there yet? How much longer? Well, verse 3, Jerusalem is builded as a city that is compact together, whither the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, unto the testimony of Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. You can just imagine some of the people, many of the people that lived in small rural villages, as they came to Jerusalem, they see this big city. And it is a city with walls. It's a city that is fortified. It's the national capital. They must have been so impressed just to come there, just to be there, just to set their feet inside the place. Build it as a city that is compact together. And that word compact is a word that means joined together. It's used in the book of Exodus, chapter 26, for these various pieces or panels of the tabernacle that were coupled together. And that word coupled is the word compact here. Coupled or compacted together so that it would be one tabernacle or one tent. Those various pieces were all sewed together or coupled together with couplings. And that's what Jerusalem is, he says. It's built as a city that is compact together, making it one great walled city. And of course, the purpose for coming is stated here. The tribes are all coming unto the testimony of Israel. That is probably a reference to the Temple Mount and the Ark of the Covenant and everything that was located there. Coming in order to worship the Lord, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. The purpose, or at least one of the main purposes, for these annual feast occasions that brought everyone from all over the nation of Israel was to give thanks to the Lord. Thanksgiving is an important part of our worship of the Lord. It's not just an annual holiday. It is an attitude of heart every day. Now, verse 5 goes on and tells some of the unique features of Jerusalem. For there are set, or there do sit, as the margin says, thrones of judgment, the thrones of the house of David. This is the place, the one place on earth where good government was maintained, where there were thrones of judgment. And the idea of judgment there is not retribution, not punishment, as much as justice, uprightness. This is the place where good government was maintained. And the thrones of the house of David. That phrase makes connection with Israel's unique history as the people of God. And not just history, not just the past, but God's great promises, His covenant mercies promised to the house of David forevermore, which is fulfilled in Christ. So this is why Jerusalem is such a special place, a destination for the pilgrims. And then in verses 6 through 8, we see much emphasis here on the matter of peace. It's mentioned once in each of these three verses. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee. Peace be within thy walls and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and companions' sakes, I will now say, peace be within thee. The very name Jerusalem has in its last two syllables this word peace, or a form of this word peace, Salem. David here has a great desire for the peace of Jerusalem. And he calls others to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And then he himself makes a prayer for the peace of Jerusalem in verse 7. Peace be within thy walls, and prosperity or rest within thy palaces. There's a great love for this city in the heart of every Israelite. They shall prosper that love thee. And then verse 8 says something about a concern for the good of others. It's not just a selfish desire, not a selfish delight, but it is for the whole of the nation. For my brethren and companions' sakes, I will now say, peace be within thee. What's good for Jerusalem is good for all of us, he says. And then finally, in verse 9 here, there's a spiritual concern. It's because of the house of the Lord our God I will seek thy good. You know, Jerusalem was no doubt a beautiful city, but it wasn't just as a city, but it was because it was the place where God met with man on earth in a most unique way, in the way that he had ordained, in his temple. And these feasts, especially the feast of Passover and the feast that was with the Day of Atonement there before tabernacles, kind of all ran together. This was the great feature. This was the unique feature. It's because of the house of the Lord our God I will seek thy good. These were the thoughts that were upon the hearts of the pilgrims coming to Jerusalem on feast days. Now, what are we to make of this for ourselves? We don't make pilgrimages to Jerusalem. What does the New Testament have to say about the truth of Psalm 122? Well, I would first of all remind you of another Old Testament passage, one that we looked at not too many weeks ago in Isaiah, that sounds remarkably similar to this psalm. It shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. If you look at those verses from Isaiah 2, just phrase by phrase, you'll see some remarkable parallels here to this psalm. And Isaiah here is clearly speaking of New Testament things. These are prophecies and promises of the success of the gospel. What Jerusalem was to the Israelite, the church is to the Christian. Let me say that again. What Jerusalem was to the Israelite, the church is to the Christian. The New Testament church is the temple of the living God. That's exactly what Paul says to the Corinthians. And he says it not once, but twice. He says it in 1 Corinthians 3 and in 2 Corinthians 6. He says, ye are the temple of God. Our New Testament worship is not focused upon a location, a geographical spot, a mountain. It is the gathering of the people. We are living stones put together in a living temple. And this is the focus of our energy, our commitment. This is the institution that the Lord has ordained for His worship. We read in the book of Hebrews chapter 12 that we've come to the heavenly Jerusalem. Let me just turn and read that real quickly here. We're not coming to Jerusalem on the other side of the earth. That was good for the Old Testament economy. But now, ye are come unto Mount Zion, and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect, and to Jesus the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel. In the New Testament church, we have Zion. What is the parallel of Zion on this earth? And Christ is our King, who sits upon His throne, who governs us, whom we worship, before whom we appear when we come together. And so the question that we need to ask ourselves is this: is there anything in us that corresponds to the attitude of desire and delight as we come to public worship that these Israelites had when they came to their feast days? Do we love the Lord's church, the church of which we are members? Do we approach times of gathering for worship with eagerness? As you are in your car and on your way here, do you have something in your soul that corresponds and says, "I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord"? I was thinking here this weekend, there's going to be tens of thousands of people gathering in Indianapolis, Indiana, for two or three basketball games. And you can just imagine the excitement, the eagerness, the anticipation. You know, probably many of them are already there. They're, you know, making a whole week-long event out of it. Indianapolis is their destination. They've got tickets to those big games. This is what they're looking forward to. Do you think any of them are going kicking and screaming to Indianapolis? I don't think so. They can't wait. No obstacle is too big to overcome to get there. I wonder if the zeal and eagerness of the people of this world for their games doesn't condemn the people of God when we have such more important things to come together for. Our disposition about the Lord's church tells everything that there is to tell about us. Our attitude toward the worship of God tells everything that there is to be told. That's our spiritual barometer. Mr. Spurgeon, commenting on verse 3 about Jerusalem builded as a city that is compact together, makes a very interesting and important application. He says, in a church, one of the most delightful conditions is the compactness of unity.
one Lord, one faith, one baptism. A church should be one in creed and one in heart, one in testimony and one in service, one in aspiration and one in sympathy. They greatly injure our Jerusalem, who would build dividing walls within her. She needs compacting, not dividing. There is no joy in going up to a church which is rent with internal dissension. The gladness of holy men is aroused by the adhesiveness of love, the unity of life. It would be their sadness if they saw the church to be a house divided against itself. And then, to continue with Spurgeon here, when he gets down to these verses about the peace of Jerusalem, he says, in a church, one of the main ingredients of success is internal peace. Strife, suspicion, party spirit, division, these are deadly things. Those who break the peace of the church deserve to suffer, and those who sustain it win a great blessing. Peace in the church should be our daily prayer, and in so praying, we shall bring down peace upon ourselves. For the psalmist goes on to say, they shall prosper that love thee. There in verse 6. And so let us take seriously this call to prayer. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Do you pray for your church? Is the peace and prosperity of your church the great priority in your prayers for it? Let us make sure that our peace and unity is in spiritual things, not lesser matters and pursuits that bond together the lost people of this world in their organizations. It is because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek thy good. Our focus must always be on God and on the good of souls in their relationship to God. And so this is a very practical and relevant psalm for us. I want to close with these words from William Plummer. Makes a very interesting point as a conclusion. If the ancient city of Jerusalem, and yet more the poor marred Church of Christ on earth, have such beauties in the eyes of heaven-born souls, how great must be the attractions of the heavenly Jerusalem. End quote. Well, that's a Selah statement, is it not? If we look forward to coming together on Lord's days and Wednesdays and any occasion that the Lord allows us, then how much better and how much more attractive must be the attractions of heaven itself. And let us look forward and long to that. And when the Lord calls us to our heavenly home, that will be the most joyous of days. I will be glad when the Lord says unto me, come to my house forevermore.